your likes are unlike anybody else's likes, and your preferences are, you know, your preferences. And as an artist, these are your assets. This is all you have as an artist.
Hi, and welcome to episode 244 of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Louise Fletcher. And today I'm joined by a special guest. Alice is taking a break, and I'm joined by Sally Ann Ashley, guest and friend of the podcast. Hi, Sally Ann.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me back.
Is this your second time or third time now? I can't remember.
Second.
Second time. So Sally Ann, I'm going to let you introduce yourself and tell people who you are and what you do, but you're an artist whose work I really admire and also a teacher. And just tell us a little bit about yourself and your work.
Well, thanks for those kind words, Louise. That's nice. I'm Sally Ann. I live in on the south east coast of the UK. I'm a full-time artist, just over 3 years. My work is predominantly abstract, but it's made up of many parts. I have lots of different parts to my process, but mostly it results in paintings and collages.
Yeah, beautiful paintings and collages. And where can people, before we get into the conversation, where can they go to have a look? Because I always like to look while I'm listening. What's okay. Your website or Instagram?
So my website is sallyannashley.com, Sally hyphen and with an E. And my Instagram is sallyann without a hyphen, sallyannashleyart.
Brilliant. So go have a look while we're chatting, everyone, and then it might make a little bit more sense. One reason why I wanted to talk to you this week, and so it's very fortuitous, is that Sally Ann teaches a course, which we'll probably talk about in the course of this, and I think it's coming up soon, so we will get into that. But I took that course myself. I don't take that many courses, but I came and did yours maybe 2 years ago, I think, and because I was a little bit stuck with something I was trying to do. And since that, and it's great, and I got all sorts of learning from it, some of which I didn't implement, which is, isn't that the way with courses? It's like we know it's right, but then we just carry on in our own way. And so what your course was all about, and the reason I joined it, is about how to, excuse me, how to shift, how to make change. When your art feels like it's about to change, or you want to take it to a new level, or you want to try something different, how do you do that? And just to give you some background, Sally Ann, about what I wanted to talk about today, I've been back in that position of wanting to do something different. And I had a couple of really bad studio days, and just everything was a mess. And I sat down and thought, what is going wrong? Why am I not getting this? And what was going wrong was that the process and even the materials in some cases were not supporting what I wanted to do, which is, she's raising her arms in the air, because that's one of the things you talked about in your course, which I went through. So I guess the good news is the fact that I learned from you means that came into my head and I was like, that's what's going on. But the bad news is I hadn't done anything about it in the past. So I sat down and I started to think about it. Can you, in your own words, just talk about this a little bit more? Because I think so many people can benefit from this idea that we can't just intuitively paint and paint and paint. There's got to be some other stuff going on. Like, I think of it almost like the foundations of what we're doing.
Yep. Yep. You're totally speaking my language. Everything.
So go on, explain it to us in your way.
So let's just unpick, let's just go back a bit to what you said about when you had that thought of, you said you had a couple of bad studio days. Well, you know, we can't put too much pressure on that because we know we can have crappy studio days. But what you said was something was feeling off. something was feeling not right. So first of all, we have to, I think, recognize these feelings within ourselves. What does this uncomfortability even feel like? You know, so it could be, I have a few crappy studio days. It could be, you just keep banging your head against a wall with something. It could, some people are paralyzed. I was paralyzed when I started to do this. And we have these art spaces at home where, you know, we feel really grateful to have the spaces, but then we think we're not using them. We're not doing anything with them. So it's like, what does this firstly feel like? And then it's exactly what you did. And you said, what's going wrong? It's bringing awareness to these things. And I think that's the point. Everything starts with the awareness for me, because that's the point where we can either throw everything out and think, oh, I'm just rubbish. I'm this, I'm that, this is crap, and all the rest of it. Or we can just take a moment and think, hang on, this was my journey. I have many great studio days. I love my practice. I love my work. So I can't throw everything out just because of these, you know, uncomfortable moments. So it's taking that time to, with your rational mind, if you can, think, what's going wrong here? And then we can start to pinpoint along the way, it must be something. You know, so in your case, because you'd, like you said, had that experience on my course where you thought, well, could it be this or could it be that? Could it be my materials? So I think it's a way, like, especially on the way I deal with this, I look at my practice, I've broke it down into so many different parts. So I know that somewhere that uncomfortable feeling will be somewhere in those parts. And that could be, like you said, it could be your materials. It could be that you're just not feeling inspired that day. It could be that you are not allowing yourself to experiment and you've come to a block because you keep doing the same thing over and over again. You might be bored. Yeah. You know, there's just so many things it could be. And I think what's important is what you did, and you just stopped and you said, why?
And I want to go into some of those things. I don't want to go into too many because I know you teach those and I don't want to take everything you teach, but I want to go into some of them. But I also just wanted to mention, Sally Ann said then she loved her work and she loved her practice, but it wasn't working at the moment. Same for me. You know, I've made things I've loved in the past, so I know I can do it again in theory. But there are also people who've maybe come back to making art after a long time away, or maybe started from scratch later in life. And they're like, but I'm not even making things I like, so I must be rubbish. And actually, I still think for those people, it comes to the same as it does for us, which is you're not rubbish. You just haven't yet found your thing and your way of doing your thing, right? And that's two separate things, really. It's, so I could say, well, my thing is emotional abstract landscapes, which is what it was for a long time. That's okay, I know what my thing is, but now I've got to know how to do that, and I've got to think through how I'm going to do that. And so many people, because I talk a lot about intuitive painting, so do you, and then people say, well, intuitive painting just means picking up a brush and getting on with it, doesn't it? And yet it really doesn't, does it? It's how do you think about the balance between the two? Because you are, you know, one of the most intuitive artists I know. And yet you've got all this foundation to it.
Well, I think when we say we work intuitively, it doesn't just come from nowhere. We don't have an absolutely like empty head all of the time and we're just going around picking things up. We have things that are rooted within us. We have certain colors that we like. And even beginners, like you said, even people that are not creating, this is a way of, it's a way of seeing and it's a way of being. It's like when we go out and take photographs of things, you know, there's certain things that you might not even realize why you're taking that photo, but with, you know, applying this like mindful approach, you can then look at the photos and think, oh, well, I keep putting that on the left. Oh, well, that keeps coming in from the right. There will still be threads in your work that that are translated, you know, through these. And they're like when we talk about visual elements, you know, like shapes and colors and things. But these are the things that are inherently within you. You like them from your core, you know. So when we say working from intuition, you're actually working from those things. Yeah. And so the more you can, I guess this, when I talk about awareness, the more we can bring awareness to this, the more we can surround ourselves with the things we love, so that then we're just filling ourselves up all the time with this inspiration and feeling creative, so that when we go into the studio, you know, we don't feel stuck. It's like, because we've refilled ourselves, we have something to work from. So the balance between intuition and kind of, was that what you said, the balance between intuition and working from,
and I don't know what word I used, but it's like the balance between intuition and having a foundation to it, or a base, yeah, solid kind of foundation that's built on.
So yeah, because we take technique classes, we take courses, and that's all building our like technical toolbox, if you like. And then we have all this other, the mindfulness side of it, where we're going out and we're noticing, and, you know, the way even we decorate our homes, the colors you choose, you know, that's all part of it. And that's then like intuitively then when you're in the studio, you're starting to bring some pieces from your technical classes, bring some pieces from, you know, the mindful side. And that's kind of, I don't know, bubbling to the surface. So we think we're working intuitively, and we are to some extent. But because I've worked on this for so long now, I can see where our intuition's coming from, you know, how we've been building these foundations under the surface. And it's all so important, and it's all so valuable.
Yeah. And it comes to something, I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast. I've certainly talked about it in different places, but this idea that you're very good at, of honoring what you care about. So some of the people listening might never have thought to, you said, oh, I always, when I take photos, have something coming in from the left, for example. A lot of people will look at that and say, oh, stupid me, I'm doing the same thing again. Look, I always do that. And I need to be different because I've seen this artist over here and they don't do that. They're brilliant and they do something else. And instead of saying, oh, that's my thing, that's one of my things, I like that. And that is what you are very good at modeling for other people as well, is I like this and that makes it okay because I like it. That's enough. I don't have to defend it, explain it, justify it. Yeah. Sometimes I don't even have to understand it, right, with a conscious mind. I just have to know that's the thing. I mean, funny example, it's been slightly irritating me, but I'm getting over it. I did a series of paintings recently, and they were based on an upset that had happened in my life. And so many people said, this one looks upside down to me. And at first I was like, well, it's not, you know. But then I thought, oh, well, maybe that's me, you know, subconsciously saying everything's tipped upside down at that moment. Maybe, I don't know. I didn't do it consciously. I'm not turning them the other way up because they don't look right to me the other way up. They look right this way. But in the beginning, I might have said, oh, quite a few people have said these look upside down. I should turn them round. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, because I would have honored their feelings more than my own. Now, I'd rather they be upside down, if that's what people think they are, and not sell to anyone in the, you know, in the end, if that's the way it goes, because they need to be that way up for me. Yeah. So it's that feeling of, do you come across that with people where they've been dismissing things about themselves for a long time?
Yeah, absolutely. It's exactly what you just said, because we value other people's likes or think, you know, their work or whatever more than our own. So yeah, one of the first things, I was only recording for the course yesterday, so this is fresh in my mind. I was only saying, your likes are so valid, because your likes are unlike anybody else's likes, and your preferences are, you know, your preferences. And as an artist, these are your assets. This is all you have as an artist. you know, you can't be anybody else. My whole thing is, let's take our likes and preferences and everything that we're about, and let's run with that, because we are going to get to such a more authentic place with our work if we listen to ourselves and just you know, run with your own ideas here. And of course, there's every place for learning technique along the way, which I, you know, I've taken many courses and learned from many artists. But it's that thing of taking bits from here that suits you, take bits from here that suit you, take, you know, and it's like building this real personal practice, because that's the way you're going to make your personal work. And let's face it, that's, for me, it's the most enjoyable way to work. I can't, yeah. Why would I want to work like somebody else? Or, you know, it's, if it doesn't sit right with me, it's jarring, then A, it's not going to be comfortable. And I'm just going to be questioning all the time of, oh, it's not, you know, it's what she said or he said. Or, but I understand, yeah, at the beginning, you that takes time to build that confidence. It does take time, but you know, there aren't any shortcuts to it. It's like this fierce determination to want that in yourself, and to follow that.
Yeah, and you've got to be able, and not everyone can or wants to do this, right? Some people might just want to please their spouse or their family, and mm-hmm. they don't enough want to be an individual artist. They just want to do something other people like. Somebody in my group posted the other day, I've done this painting, and it was like, it's quite exciting abstract. And they said, I've been selling for 25 years and I know this won't sell, but I'm enjoying it. What do I do? And I was like, you know, this won't sell. I actually said, do you know that? Because it looks to me like it would, but not to the same people, not to the people you've been selling to. Probably, let's say, I don't know what this lady was doing, but say she was painting horse portraits. Well, that audience is not, most of them are not going to be interested in a crazy abstract. Some might be. Yeah. You got to find the new people. But if you love what you're doing, how could you go back to the horse portraits if that's not what's making you happy?
Yeah.
And likewise for the person who all they want to do is horse portraits, but they think, oh, horse portraits are too narrow, nobody's going to want those. You've got to, if you want to be the kind of artist who's making individual work, you've got to be following that thing you love. But it is so hard when, you know, people say, oh, my spouse loved it when I was doing this thing, but now they think I'm doing rubbish.
Yeah, I think it comes back to, you know, why are you creating? What do you want from this? And if you can answer that in yourself, then I think when you come across all these sticky moments, if you can keep coming back to that, that's your point of reassurance and that's your point of confidence. Because, when we're trying new things, we don't have anything else, do we? Because we are, you know, we put ourselves out there to be judged. I'm doing a 100-day project at the moment and I'm exploring scribbles, for want of a better word. you know, so it's like, how's that going to go down? Well, I don't know, but I want to do it. So either, you know, come along for the journey or don't.
Yeah. I often get newer artists thinking that I am surrounded by people in my real life who love what I do. I don't know if you get that. And the opposite is true.
Opposite for me. Yeah, totally opposite for me. I stopped really having those conversations, to be honest.
The people around me have stopped commenting as well, because I think they know there's no point in them saying to me, what's it supposed to be, or is it the right way up? Or,
and also, I don't want to keep defending that. I've decided this is, you know, what I want to do. And we each only have a certain amount of energy. So it's like, where are we going to place that energy? I'm not going to be placing that energy in trying to convince people that aren't having those conversations with me at the moment that I'm actually, you know, my work's okay or whatever, because also, you know, you've got your own voices going on and I'm thinking, well, is this okay? Well, I don't know. Is it? It's, what are you doing, Sunny-Ann? You know, and you're battling with that as well. So it's like, I only have enough energy and kind of determination to put in one pot.
Yeah, I love that idea. So if we have decided, right, I want to do what Sally-Ann's talking about, I want to do what Louise is talking about, I want to be my own person, I want to push forward, and I know this shift I'm going to make, this change is going to be challenging because it's new for me. Can you give us one or two of, you mentioned that you've broken your practice down into these areas. Can you give us a couple of like practical examples of how that might work? Because I know it might be hard for people to kind of grasp onto from what we've been talking about.
Okay, so this is a really, really simple one, really accessible. And it comes back to what you said at the beginning. Let's talk about materials. So it's so vast, the whole subject of it. And it's one of the modules in the course is about kind of doing a review of your materials and processes. So if we just focus on materials first, it's like, are your materials supporting this work that you're currently doing, or this shift that you're thinking of? You know, like in your example, you thought something wasn't working with materials. Well, let's explore that then. What do you think it is? And have you got those materials available? You know, is there something new you'd like to bring into your practice? Or what I often find at this point with artists, they say, Sally-Anne, I don't want to bring anything new in. If anything, I've got too many. So Are we walking into our studios every day and just thinking, jeepers, where do I start? You know, you've got charcoal, you've got watercolor, you've got acrylics, you've got this, you've got, and it's sometimes it's just over decision fatigue of it. So there's a point in the course where it's like, right, really go through what your materials are looking like and really assess, you know, what are you using on a day-to-day basis? And can we just have a big sort out of all of this? Again, it's bringing awareness to each stage. And if that's one of the stages, then let's look at that and make sure it's, like I said, supporting your work today, but also whatever inkling this shift might be. Maybe it's a new subject matter. Maybe it's a new, I don't know, maybe it is a new material, but what does that shift look like in that little space of just talking about materials?
Yeah. And my example, which is even more narrow than that, was I realized, so I was painting very quickly because I was trying to get specific feelings out, like almost action painting idea, but not on giant canvases dripping paint, but that idea of like from my body onto the canvas with no brain in between. Mm-hmm. And what I realized, one of the things I realized is the way I set my palette up, I have two dinner trays. I got this off Nicholas Wilton at CVP, and I have two dinner trays that I mix on. You know, the trays you put on your lap to eat your tea. Yeah. But I realized there's not enough room on my palette at the moment. So what's happening as I work quickly, I'm just making a big mush of color. Like in 10 minutes, all my colors are a mess. But then because I'm so in it, I'm still painting. So all of a sudden it goes from the colors I was choosing to browns and grays because I've mixed too much. I've made a mess and yeah. I'm too excited to stop. So in the, because I want to get these feelings onto the canvas, it wouldn't work to slow down. So that's not the answer. And clean my palette and start again. That just interrupts the flow. So yeah. I've got to think about a way that I can have a bigger palette with more space on it that I can then make more of a mess.
Yeah.
And that's such a small thing, but it makes a big difference.
It's such a small thing, but what you're talking about is identifying a stumbling block in your process that was creating this, like you say, mess or a halt in your painting yeah. practice. And the idea is you've already identified the way you want to work, quick, expressive, so you don't want any jarring. So yeah, perfect. I need a bigger palette. Or even let's backtrack a bit further. If you know the sorts of colors that you want to be using, you can pre-mix and just have some pre-mixed quite large quantities there so that you can just keep pouring some of those onto a bigger space.
Yeah.
So it's like, what can we make ourselves? It's like creating little frameworks for each part of our practice, you know, so that could be that small process that you're making there that suits this way of working. And yes. So now you've got that, it's like a tick box, right? I know what I want to achieve in the studio today. Let me set myself up, let me get my foundations, you know, correct, and then that you're good to go.
Yeah,
I call it like setting up your environment. It's like setting up your environment to be this really fertile ground so you can just go.
That's weird, maybe, because I just wrote a newsletter this morning, which will have already gone out and this comes out. And I use that word environment. And I'm just letting everyone know I didn't steal it from Sally Ann. I wrote it this morning. But yeah, it is. It's because that's what I thought about the palette. It's the environment is getting in my way.
Yeah.
And also the mess I make as I go is getting in my way. So I need a place to, this is such a small thing, but to throw things away, or to another little table or trolley to put things in that I'm not using, instead of putting them all on the table where I'm mixing paint. So just having a way of not trying to be tidy while I'm working, because that wouldn't work either, but trying to just keep the mess from getting in the way of what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's just like slickening up your processes. But this is about, this is the my whole ethos about identifying a really personal practice that's really personal to you, because it's not like you could go on, I mean, there might be, I don't know, but I was going to say, you don't go on a course and somebody says, right, make sure you've set a box up at the side where you can just throw your tools, because maybe that artist doesn't work like that.
And
maybe
it wouldn't work for anyone else. Yeah.
No. You being mindful in your practice and asking those questions, right? Where am I getting stuck? What's happening? You know, they're simple changes for you. And then that would be hours of like just being in your, that's when you can work intuitively, because you haven't got all these blocks coming into you.
Yeah.
I'll just give you an example. There's a lady on my course last year, and she noticed one of her blocks, or where she was feeling this disconnection. She hadn't realized until we spoke through all these little steps, but she realized that she felt disconnected when she was tidying her materials away every day. And she said, I like my house really tidy. I don't want all the paint out. But she said, in that, I realized the next day it was taking her so much longer to get back into that creative flow. So she said, I just made a small change. All she did, she tidied a little bit, but she said, by leaving her sketchbook open on the side and just leaving a few materials to hand, like don't tidy everything away, it totally changed her practice.
Mm.
And she said, because when I was passing the dinner, I think she'd done it on her dining table or something, but she says, when I was cooking dinner, I could just quickly look back over. When I was passing, I could just make a mark. When I, you know, and it's that thing of staying connected to your practice and identifying what are the hiccups here? Where are you getting pulled up? And let's put some awareness to that and make solutions. It's like problem solving.
Yeah, I have a little bit of an example like that, where for a while, other things were taking up my days at the start of this year, personal things and work things that weren't painting, and I was not getting any time to paint. And then when my dog's at home, I don't like leaving him on his own. Pathetic, he's my baby. I don't like leaving him on his own. So I don't go over to the studio at night, which is on my property, but you know, a walk away, and he will not come in the studio. Don't write in and suggest that, because he refuses. So he's in the house. So I was like, oh, I have a bit of time in the evenings, but I don't create. I don't want to make a mess in the house. I'm the same. I don't like a mess in the house. My studio's a pigsty, but I don't like a mess in the house. But I just thought about it again, going back to what you talked about on the course. And I thought, what could I do? So I got some collage materials, some Pritt stick glue sticks that don't make a mess, some watercolors, because they're not so messy. And I had a bench in my kitchen which was full of scarves and gloves that I've never worn for like 4 years. So I emptied this bench out and put my materials in there, my sketchbooks and these bits of collage and stuff. And now I can go in and just in the evening while I'm cooking, I can grab things and do a little bit of art without making a mess, but still, as you say, feeling connected. Apologies for my voice, everyone. I just choked myself, but we're going to keep going. These little things, it's the things I think we don't stop and think about. And it comes back to honoring ourselves again, instead of beating ourselves up, like I said, oh, so stupid, I don't want to leave my dog on his own, or instead of accepting, oh, well, that's it, I don't want to leave him, so I can't do it. Finding a way around these different obstacles. I'll give you another example. People often say, I can't paint big because I have a small space. Well, I used to work in a cupboard, like literally a cupboard with a little mini table in it, little built-in shelf that I worked on. And to work large, I used to bring my paintings outside in the summer. So I couldn't work large often in winter. Sometimes I could with gloves and a scarf and a hat. But if it's raining, which it is a lot in Britain in the winter, I couldn't. But in summer, I could. Somebody else that we did a interview with in my community, she works in her house on the dining table on these giant canvases of still lifes. She manages because she cleared the dining table and that's what she does when she's working on a big piece. So it's not true to say we can't do it if we have a small space, but we let things like that stop us. We believe, oh, well, it's not possible for me just because she's got a big studio, I can't do it.
Yeah.
There's always a bigger studio than you've got. There's always better materials than you've got. There's, you know, that's just the way it goes. You can do something with what you've got. Can you give us another example? We've talked about materials, but another kind of facet of this that people can think about?
Well, it ties in with what you've just been saying about when we're in our studios, when we're not in our studios, how we can make things work. It's like this whole approach that I have is like a holistic approach to your creative practice as a whole. So my thing that I sort of talk about is you're not just an artist when you're in your studio or when you've got a brush in your hand. You know, it's all these little moments. And I know you gave a literal example there of you moved your sketchbook in the dining room and, you know, you could do that. But it's like all those little moments add up to when you are in the studio. So to open that a bit further, it's like this thing of, you know, sometimes we think, oh, I haven't got time to go for a walk, or I haven't got time to do this, or I haven't got time to whatever. And I think let's try and bring awareness and our creativity to as many moments as we can. So the whole thing about when we're out on walks, how many times do we see on Instagram people taking pictures of old walls and bits of moss and all the things, you know, it's kind of that thing of what we're noticing. And that is such a huge well of information for our creative practice. So although we don't have a brush in our hand in the studio, if you're out and you're noticing and you're looking at things, all of that information, whether it's colors and palettes, whether it's like what I was saying earlier, oh, I always like things coming in from there, or I love those telegraph poles with the lines. All of that is information that you're taking in your brain sort of, you know, subconsciously, and it will come out somewhere. So on the course, what I find when people say, you know, I haven't got time to create, I haven't got time to do this, I haven't got time, and they're feeling frustrated, by the time they've left Creative Shift, that I have emails all the time and all my feedback says, Sunny Ann, I just feel so much more calm. I understand that I'm a creative being, you know, I'm not just a painting when I'm, you know, in the studio. So it's kind of like opening up your awareness to everything else in your life. You know, when you're cooking, all the colors that are in the pan, when you're, you know, out driving, you might see a lovely sunset, and it's connecting back, like staying in your, I think the more we can step into this creative side of our brain, the more we realize that's really accessible to us. It's available all the time.
And one of the ways I like to do that is to practice choosing. I did this more at the beginning. To practice, for example, I've said before, I love going in vintage shops, antique shops. It's like my thing to do if I've ever got any spare time. And I like to just go around going that, but not that, that, but not that. Like even things I'm never going to buy, I'm not interested in, some chests of drawers. Okay, which one do I like and which ones don't? Because that sense of choosing paint colors for my house, which ones would I consider, which ones are complete no-no. It's not like I'm going to go back and put that in a painting tomorrow, but as you said, it's the practice of honoring my own choices and being okay with if someone else says, you like that chest of drawers, that's awful, and me saying, yeah, I do.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just practicing in every facet of life. Like, as you said, taking pictures on walks, choosing in a shop. If I could buy anything, which thing would I buy? Which holiday would I go on? If I could go anywhere, what? And so many times, especially with women, we're not used to doing that, especially if we've had a family. We're used to, which I don't think you have either. I haven't got kids, but I work with a lot of women who have had, and you do too. And they're so used to putting everyone else ahead of themselves that the idea of saying, what do you like? Sometimes, especially with other artists, people will say, I don't know which artists I like. I've never thought about it. Just practicing, and I'm talking a lot now, but I went shopping with my mum to an art fair because she wanted a piece of art for above her fireplace. This was a few years ago. And she saw something she liked. And I said, why don't you get it? And she said, I don't know if it's any good, though. I don't know if I like it. Like, I think I like it. And she needed other people. And even me telling her wasn't enough because she doesn't understand what I paint. So if, that was probably a no-no if I said it was good. But she wants other people to say, because she doesn't know what she likes. And that practicing is so important. And that's mindfulness again.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Just becoming aware. And I think it feels once we can encourage that kind of confidence in ourselves to say that over that, that it's really strengthening for our inner selves, you know, because, and then it feels quite almost fun, and it's curious then to be like, well, do I like that? And why do I like that? But eventually that turns into confidence, you know, that turns into confidence, and the confidence, we get courage, you know, it kind of builds on. It's this, just idea that, I don't know, I struggle to talk about some of these things sometimes, but it's just a way of growing and developing, being more of yourself. You know, we hear about art and things becoming, it's a way of becoming, it's a way of finding out who we are. And all of this that sits underneath it is part of it.
Yeah.
Every single part goes into it.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up. I just want to mention, because Sally Ann's too modest to mention, that she actually is about to start teaching her course in a couple of weeks. If you're listening to this as it comes out in March 2024, then you're in luck, because the course is coming up. If you're listening to it later than that, if you just go to Sally Ann's website, I'm sure there's information about when it's coming again. But when is it coming this year, Sally Ann?
So we start on the 1st of April.
Right. And can people sign up right up to that date, or do you close before that date?
Yeah, no, they can sign up right up until that date. But I am opening the platform a little bit earlier this year, because I'd love for everybody to come in and get settled first. And there's a few kind of preliminary exercises that are quite exciting. So,
Okay, well, it's highly recommended by me. So take a look at least and see if you think it might be something for you. Before we wrap up with today's, we usually, when it's Alice and I, we usually do a segment called What's Inspired. And I don't know if you have anything, Sally Ann, I didn't prep you for that, but I do. So you can be thinking while I'm talking. And if you have something, that would be great. But if not, don't worry. But I had something I really wanted to mention, because I found it absolutely fascinating. And it's a podcast that I've mentioned before called Search Engine with PJ Vogt. But this is a particular episode that I want to recommend. Okay, they don't have episode numbers, but it was released on March the 8th, and it's called Who's Behind These Scammy Messages We've All Been Getting? And so many times I'm asked about, in my membership group, about the messages we get on Instagram about NFTs, or is your work for sale, or... And when I got those messages, I always got really annoyed. Like, what kind of, you know, loser are you sitting there trying to scam people out of their money, or Keanu Reeves wants to go out with you, or whatever it is. But this episode of Search Engine has completely transformed my opinion about it all. And the episode, and a reporter decided to investigate who's behind it. And it turns out that who's behind those messages you get are basically compounds full of slaves who are forced to send those messages. And I'm going to suggest you listen to the episode to get the whole story, but they're located in countries like Cambodia and Myanmar. And this story involves slavery, imprisonment, torture. And so when you get those messages, it's not coming from an individual scammer. sitting there thinking they'll try and rip you off. It's coming from a person who probably applied for a customer service job somewhere and then ended up embroiled in this world that they cannot get back out of. A huge business. It's billions and billions and billions of dollars, and it's run by these shadowy figures who have all these people working for them. And it just changed my mind so much that I just now feel sympathy for these when I get these messages rather than frustration or anger. So I highly recommend it. 8th of March, Search Engine with PJ Vogt. It's just fascinating, the whole story and how it unravels. And it might just make you feel a bit less irritated when you have to clear out your spam. In the episode, he talks a lot about text messages, which apparently are big in America, but he does refer to Instagram messages and other social media platforms. So it's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. So not really inspiring, but kind of.
There's always
more to everything, isn't there? There's always more to everything than you think. So,
yeah. What's inspired me? Well, I've been in a world of course preparation, so I haven't really taken any external inspiration this week. But I tell you something, and this comes out of the whole reframing idea of I've been, as mentioned earlier, doing the 100-day project, and of course I've not been able to keep up every day, and it's been thinking, what can I post today or what can I do? And I saw another artist on Instagram posted a little bit of a collage mashup of her work, so I thought, I'll try that. So I did my version, and in the doing of that, it was so inspiring because I was working in a different way. So I was working cutting photographs up and like moving them around. I think I used Canva. But I was also learning so much about composition and putting all, you know, things together. And I thought, look at that reframe from something I was feeling really, you know, crappy about and disappointed in myself that, oh, you're not keeping up with the 100-day project. Just having a different inroad, a different routine, trying something new that didn't take me very long at all. Now something fresh has come out of that. And I'm actually so inspired by it that I think I'll do something more of it. So it's just a reminder to self, like an inspiring reminder to self of when things feel bad or they look bad, it's kind of like, oh, you know, it was a real shame you didn't keep up with the 100-day project. And I thought, is it?
Yeah. You know, or like, is it a good thing? And even when you've been doing that, I was following it on Instagram and I didn't even realize you weren't keeping up because you seem to be doing loads to me. And you said something in there about, I don't know why I'm doing this. It's just scribbles. I don't know, but I'm still going to keep going. And then, hey, presto, you get a possible answer as to why you might be doing it comes out of the blue.
Exactly.
It always shocks me that how if we just let go and just let things happen, the answers come through.
They do. And it's just knuckling down and keep going with what you believe in.
Yeah, exactly, which goes back to what we've been saying about honouring your own choices, doesn't it? And yeah, yours was much more inspiring than mine. Mine was a bit of a downer, however.
Yeah, ending on a happy note.
thanks to Sally Ann for ending us on a happy note. So we will see you next time. I think we'll be back next week, Alice and I, but we keep it a bit lighter these days and sometimes we miss a week, but we have every intention of being back next week anyway. Thanks so much, Sally Ann. Once again, you can find Sally Ann at, what is your website address?
SallyAnnAshley.com.
And you'll find the course there if you're listening to this in real time. And you can also look at Sally Ann's beautiful work. And if you go to her Instagram, which she mentioned earlier, and you can just type Sally Ann Ashley into the search and you'll find it. She has all of her work on the 100-day project, which has been really interesting to watch as well. Okay, see you soon, Sally Ann.
Thanks for having me. Bye.
Bye.